Well, welcome to the podcast entitled Behavioral Health of Dr. Beth Murphy. We're going to be talking today a little bit about COVID fatigue, which probably most of us are suffering from in some form or fashion. And we're seeing, I think, at the light at the end of the tunnel with the vaccines coming up and the decrease in the number of individuals who have been infected. And unfortunately, the death rate is staying fairly consistent, but people are getting better. So we are going to, and it's not me, it's just Dr. Murphy, we'll be talking about COVID fatigue and some of the things I think that we can do as firefighters and for our fire family and our families to help alleviate some of that. And I'm sure that Dr. Murphy will talk about other issues as it deals with isolation, quarantine, fear of getting sick, and looking for your vaccines somewhere in your neighborhood. Anyway, without further ado, I'd like to present Dr. Beth Murphy. Dr. Murphy, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. Just thinking about, oh my goodness, we're talking about COVID still. Not something that I expected. I believe that I talked about it, I don't know, like maybe back in March. And it was after I had worked on a public service announcement with, and it was targeted towards pretty much like the citizens of Bellevue, Washington, and the Bellevue Fire Department. So they had reached out to me since that's where I'm retired from. So I was a known name. And they knew what I do for a living now, and they thought, oh, this is perfect. So so I talked about COVID at that time, and we talked about stress and managing stress, and I think it was around that time, March, maybe April. Maybe it was later. I found that time doesn't have the same meaning right now. I don't know if you have that problem, John. Oh, are you on mute?
Yes, Dr. Murphy, I'm still here. I'm a technologically incompetent individual, even though I have so many of the letters after my name, it's embarrassing. But yes, I think people are doing things to try to get beyond the sort of COVID, the long-term fatigue that goes on, and the worry that we all have for our family by doing, I think we've pretty much altered our entire lifestyle, not going out as much, not going to the movies, not eating dinner out, not hanging out with friends, and I think we've accommodated a lot of that. And I think we're also going to see this sort of reentry phenomenon of, when it's okay to go out and it's okay to eat in a restaurant like we're seeing in Washington State, in a limited fashion. How are people going to approach, those sort of open exposures now that we're, better educated? So I think the pendulum is going to start to swing the other way from, where we are today.
Well, yeah, I think that's a pretty true statement that we are moving in the right direction. I find that one of the first things that I find that I need to do, and this is what I recommend to my clients and to anybody that asks me how do you deal with all this. I mean, I don't think anybody expected us a year later to be talking about COVID and altering our life around COVID the way that we are. And I think that one of the things that is compounding the issue is the information that's put out. And I think that having information, it gives you power to or it empowers you to be able to make decisions. But there's so much information out there, and the news, unfortunately, has a tendency to sensationalize it. And then of course, it's been highly politicized. So that shapes the message as well, depending on who's talking about it. You know, like if it's somebody identifies as Republican, then the message is one way. And if it's somebody identifies as Democrat, the message is shaped another way. And then, you know, if it's reported by media channels that are, you know, have leanings one way or the other, then that also changes the message as well. And then, of course, you know, how does the audience interpret it? And, of course, that depends on your lens. So I try personally to be open-minded and to take in information from multiple sources. I never take the word of one source, not even one that I might trust, because even, you know, trusted sources can make mistakes. But I find that in the search of trying to get information, I can sometimes get on information overload, and then that starts to create some anxiety. And so I've seen this a lot in my clients. You know, I have some clients that watch the news a lot, and I mean, so they're either watching TV or getting news feeds to their phone, their, I don't know, any media source that they can get news. You know, it's like they're news junkies, and they're struggling with anxiety, and they're questioning, what's wrong with me? Why am I so anxious? And it's like, ooh, well, welcome to the shared human condition that's known as COVID. And so, you know, they're getting a lot of information, but they're getting, it's like getting too much. And sometimes the information is divergent. And so it really comes down to we know a few things, and then we speculate on quite a few things, and then there's still a lot we don't know. So I think that people have really, well, and they're probably on a continuum. So, I mean, the people that I've talked to, there have been kind of a collective sigh of relief because they're rolling out the vaccinations. But, you know, then you hear in the news that, I mean, so the effectiveness rate is actually pretty good. I mean, better than like the flu shot. However, there's a new strain that's out, a couple. And so the effectiveness of the vaccine is lower, but again, still better than the flu shot, at least what I've been hearing. So clearly I'm not an expert. That's not my area of expertise, but from the information that I've seen from multiple sources, that's kind of the trend. But I find myself, it's like, so you get the vaccine, but then you still have to wear a mask and maintain social distance. So, you know, essentially you're protected, but you still have a chance to infect somebody else. And I find that's one thing that people are really struggling with wrapping their brain around, including me, because we're socialized to expect that when we receive a immunization or a vaccination that we're going to be okay and good to go, and then we can go about life in the way that we're used to. And that's not really the case right now. And so people are having to, you know, rethink how they do things, and they've had to do that for the past year. So I thought that maybe in talking about this, I could share some of my experiences from people in my practice. And, half of my practice I work with first responders. So this is stuff I've heard from them, but also, the regular people out there, the non-first responders, and then also personally, you know, from my own family, just sharing a little bit, because, you know, we're human too. We're part of this. We're in it with everybody else. And while I know quite a few things, I don't always practice them. And I find that that is really the case as well with first responders, is that you know a lot of stuff. And when it comes to helping other people, you all are great at it. But when it comes to your own needs and help, not so much. And I know that from every first responder I've ever talked to, worked with, seen in my practice, and of course, you know, me as well. I mean, I was a firefighter, and I helped other people. I didn't need help, which is, you know, that's not true. But I liked to think that. I always wanted to be tough. And I thought that, you know, in order to be tough, it meant that you had to do things yourself and not ask for help. And I would ask for help begrudgingly at times. And so it's been a process for me as well to really come around and embrace that we all need help sometimes. And I think that dealing with COVID is something that is really, I think it's really evened out like the playing field for everybody. You know, it's difficult when you're dealing with something like that that's so indiscriminate. It's hard to maintain a stance that somehow you are above that or immune from it, or it's not going to touch you. I think people who thought that they wouldn't be touched by it, they have been in pretty big ways. So basically we're all sharing in this. I was reading, I think it was on the American Psychology Association page, APA.org, which I'm going to talk about a little bit because that's a great place to go for resources. But they were one of the places that was publishing articles about COVID-19 and the stress. And they talked about it in terms of COVID-19 being a traumatic experience. Because a lot of people are experiencing some PTSD type symptoms. Now, unless you or someone that you know and love has been seriously impacted or even dying from COVID, then you may look at COVID as, well, this is just, you know, another cold, it's a flu, it's a, you know, whatever. And it's hard to imagine how serious it is unless you have actually faced it in some way up close and personal. Now, if you have, then it's possible that you struggle with PTSD or, you know, maybe you meet criteria for PTSD. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to run out and get help right away. A lot of cases of PTSD, in fact, a high percentage of individuals that develop PTSD see it resolve within a year to 3 years on their own. And so not everybody that struggles with that actually seeks out help. It is helpful, of course, to get help sooner than later. But the like having a COVID-19 illness, particularly if you end up in the hospital or if a family member or other loved one develops COVID-19 and dies, then that meets that criterion A trauma that's necessary for the diagnosis of PTSD. So basically we are having this shared traumatic experience. And you can see how it has brought many people together. But it also, unfortunately, has divided people and it's separated people just by nature of how we've had to deal with it. So we have a lot of people suffering. And so that's why I think a lot of people are talking about it, but I think it just is important to continue this dialogue and to reduce the stigma around what people are feeling. So in my practice, I have people come in all the time asking, what is wrong with me? Why do I feel like this? Now, some of them were coming in initially because they were just going through some changes in their life, and so they didn't have a significant mental health diagnosis. They were just going through some changes and just feeling out of sorts, and they wanted some help, some tools. And so now they're coming in, and they're like, why? What's wrong with me? Why is this so hard? Why am I having trouble sleeping? Why do I feel like crying? Why do I feel so lonely? Why do I feel so disconnected? And so they don't, they're not understanding that this is what COVID-19 has done to us. So I call it COVID-19 syndrome or COVID syndrome. So I've heard people coin a lot of different phrases, and I haven't heard that one yet, but I'm sure that other people have used that phrase. But that's kind of the way I look at it. I mean, I think that this is a syndrome from the mental health perspective, definitely. And so my job sometimes is just to work at normalizing the experience and to make sure that people know that they're not alone in it and that they're not crazy, and what they're experiencing is actually pretty normal. And I say normal in quotation, I'm using air quotations, because normal looks different for everybody. So when I do work with people who have, like a diagnosis of PTSD or major depression or anxiety or bipolar, so something that is more severe, it's like all their symptoms have been magnified. And so I get a lot of questions from them too, like, am I crazy? Am I losing it? I can't handle this. I'm sleeping and not sleeping. I'm having nightmares. And a lot of the nightmares are, they have themes of not being in control, of losing people, and not necessarily losing them like they're dying, but losing them like they can't find them. And so that's, often that's interpreted as like a fear of death dream. But these are all definitely like anxiety provoked dreams of some sort. And so I've seen a lot of that. And so I have to try and normalize this for them, and remind them that they're not crazy and that they feel their symptoms a little bit more because maybe this is something that is really triggering them. But they'll feel their symptoms more. This is like an amplifier for them. So, and then if, it's not just about your own experience, but I had a conversation with my dad. So I was trying to help him get signed up for his first shot. So he's like 80, 82, almost 83, not really technologically savvy. He tries. He's got all the latest and greatest toys. But he's not so great at using them. So the whole process of trying to get a shot was just, it was too much for him. He couldn't figure it out. And my dad was he's a retired carpenter. So he was a superintendent and he built commercial buildings. And there was, I never, ever saw him struggle with anything. And so, now I'm watching him just really struggling and not figuring things out. So, one is, okay, yeah, he's getting older. And that can play into it too. But that's one of the things that stress does to you. So this like long-term unremitting stress is impacting everybody's ability to retain information and to learn. And the thing about this is nobody's ever experienced anything like this. Now, I know there have been other events that that I've heard about, but like I don't remember. I think the previous, like the H1N1, and John, if you're listening still, you probably know, because John's a little older than me, so he knows a little bit more. But I think that there was another event, but I didn't feel it. I mean, it didn't impact me, and I wasn't wearing masks. I remember seeing people in Asian countries wearing masks all the time, and I just remember thinking, that's so weird. Never did I imagine that would be us. And so, it's like, basically we haven't had an experience like this. So John, what was the earlier experience? And I know it wasn't to the extent that we are now.
Well, in my recall memory, when I was growing up, they had the polio epidemic, which was sort of the same, it's a viral illness. It causes, demyelination of the nerves, causes paralysis, generated or created the iron lung to help people breathe. And then Jonas Salk came out with the shot, which, everybody in America, received. And now there are very, very, if any, cases of polio in the United States. But as a kid, I remember that we couldn't go anywhere. We couldn't go to the parks. Yeah. We couldn't go to the beach. We couldn't go out to eat, and I don't remember wearing a mask, and I don't remember seeing my folks wearing a mask, but, we survived that sort of an experience. And other than those sort of areas of mass assembly, I think, life went on as far as I knew, unaffected with businesses and those sorts of things. And then, then there's the swine flu, and then there's, a couple of the other flus that kind of were in a pandemic form or an epidemic form, which, fortunately, our country and other countries have developed vaccines for. And this year, as one of my other hats I wear as a medical practitioner, flu has dropped 98% in occurrence. And I think that's a national statistic. And I, would believe that, wearing masks, washing hands, social distancing, and people actually getting the flu shot has made, a big difference. So I think that, we've had a couple of other, mass events in our country dealing with infectious diseases. But this, I think, has kind of tipped people over as far as that social isolationism, people's getting sick and dying with, over 450,000 people. One of the statistics that I tried to find today, and it's not readily available, but there are a significant number of firefighters contracting COVID and dying. And, those individuals are relatively young, healthy, whereas, we would typically think it was the old and the elderly and the infirm and people that are in nursing homes. But I think that we just have to be, cognizant of the fact that our firefighters are dying, right? And then the other is that have been kind of forced into a situation that, we've never encountered before, with, this sort of isolationism that has affected, us in the fire stations. It's affected us at home, and as we said earlier, all the social gatherings that we've been so used to.
Yeah. So, and I was just, while you were talking, I just looked it up. So the last pandemic was the swine flu in 2009. And so, I don't, I don't remember that at all. I mean, I remember hearing about it, but you know, that was a year after. Well, it was like months after I had retired from the fire department, and so I don't remember being impacted by it at all. And so for that one, it was according to I just Googled it. So, and it is referencing the WHO and CDC. And so I was trying to look at US related. And so, it's tricky to compare numbers because I don't know how they were collected, what their parameters were. And so it's not always a perfect comparison, but it showed in a 1 year period, swine flu caused 60.8 million illnesses, 273,000 hospitalizations about, and then I'm gonna round it up, but 12,500 deaths in the U.S. So if you look at it and find a different number, I'm close to it. I just rounded up, and that was over a year period. And then when I look up, I was looking up total U.S. For COVID, and we haven't reached our 1 year mark yet. It shows that there's, 25.8 million total cases. Now, this doesn't break it down to how many people are hospitalized, or I don't know if those are just positives or whatever, but it shows that there's 433,000 deaths in the United States. So that's a lot more than the 12,500 from the swine flu, but I don't remember having to isolate, and I don't remember ever wearing a mask. And so I think that is pretty much everybody's experience. And like John was saying, with the with polio going around and people kind of getting locked down at that time, that was different as well. And so, one of the things that as human beings, how we process information is when we are faced with an experience and we're trying to make sense of it, our brain automatically searches through all our memories. It's going through, sometimes when I talk about this, I get this image of a Rolodex or something, or card file catalogs that tells you gives you a sense of how old I am. But I remember going into the library and going through the a card file looking for a particular book and then having to go through the stacks to find it. And that's what I think of, when we're faced with a situation, then our brain will look through trying to find other situations that are similar, other experiences, and then it will go, this is close to that, so we're going to do this now, and we thought and felt this way, so I think this is going to be a good match, and then we'll try it out, and then we learn from it. And so if it's a novel situation, and this really falls under the novel, this is the definition of a novel situation for many, many, many people. And so our brain is just going, oh crap, what do I do with this? And so we're constantly searching for a way to deal with this and a way to feel about it. And the thing is that we're not getting the opportunity to learn from these experiences. So every time we apply a previous experience outcome to this new situation, we will take in the information about, like, you know, what did we think? What did we feel emotionally? What did we feel physically? You know, and what did we get from that? Like, what did we learn? And we're not having an opportunity to learn. And that's something that happens when you're in a situation where it's high stress and it's all the time. You don't, your brain just doesn't learn because we're kind of in survival mode. So, you know, it's like, I think a lot of people have been talking about how they've been, feeling stuck, and that's kind of what this process has done. It, you know, people don't, they don't know, there's great uncertainty. People are isolated, and that's the biggest thing. Like I talked about my dad, you know, he's like a man's man. he has a softness inside, but he's a dude, really, and he doesn't admit often when he's struggling, which is maddening when you're the person that's trying to help him, but he doesn't always. And so when I was talking to him, he was like almost in a panic trying to get scheduled to find a vaccine, you know, to schedule a vaccine, and he couldn't figure out the system. And the more he couldn't figure out the system, the more panicked he got. And then other family members were saying that they'd help him figure it out. But then he wasn't seeing any follow through. And then he confessed like how lonely he was. You know, he's been pretty cut off. I mean, we've seen him. We've been very careful in isolating and taking all our precautions. And we take the precautions not so much for ourselves, but more for other people. And that was kind of how I understood, you know, wearing a mask and maintaining your distance is it's more about others. And that's, or at least that's how I look at it. I mean, for my dad, he's afraid. And that's the case for many, many people. And it doesn't matter how macho you are. There's fear for you too. You know, whether you want to admit it or not. And I have to tell you that if you're one of those macho guys and you're listening and you're not acknowledging your fear around all this or your uncertainty even, like just admitting that there's uncertainty and you're out of balance or not feeling at your best or whatever. It's like if you're not and you're just holding it in, you're not doing yourself a service because it will build up and build up. And that's kind of how we've like talked about PTSD. That's one of the reasons why PTSD in a lot of states is accepted as presumptive in the fire service because there's the accumulation of stressors, and traumatic stressors. And it's, you know, nothing happens in a vacuum. So as a first responder, you're not immune from getting COVID-19. And as John mentioned, there are reports of firefighters, police officers, EMS workers, fire chiefs, dispatchers. I mean, they're dying too. And so you're not immune from this. You know, it's like this, you're in the human mix with the rest of us. And so it is healthier to admit that that humanity and to acknowledge the fear because a lot of times the stressors that we experience, you know, it triggers that fight flight response. Well, that's fear. And so, you know, in the course of your job, a lot of times when that gets triggered, you actually have something you can do about it and you can resolve it and you can see the outcome of that. That's not the case with COVID-19. We don't always know the outcome. We can't see the outcome. We can take in the information the best we can, and we can make decisions using that. We could take our precautions. We can get the vaccine. But there's still a lot that's unknown. And that's the one thing that all the information that's out there, it always comes back to, there's still a lot we don't know. When I did take my dad to go get his shot, we signed him up for a program, an online survey program, and it's called VSafe, I guess. And I'm not sure if that's like a national program. I mean, I hope it is, because it would make sense that if everybody's getting immunized and it's the two vaccines right now, I guess Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine, and I know that there's another one coming out, or another two maybe. But, you know, it's a way to track like side effects and how, you know, kind of how people are doing. And so, you know, they're asking the questions that he got. Well, I haven't actually seen the questions, but I know like every day he gets a notification to click a link and to fill out some questions. And I think he does that every day for a week, and then weekly after that. And then it kind of starts over when he gets his second dose. And then they're going to check in with him at 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and 12 months. And so that's providing, obviously, more information and longer-term information. So, you know, so there's that part of it that we just don't know. So, I mean, and I'm not a scientist from that perspective. So, I mean, I'm sure that they know more and they're more comfortable with it. But for the of us that are not in the know in that way, it really creates a lot of uncertainty. So even getting the vaccine, you know, it can help alleviate some anxiety, which it did for my dad. But now he's ramping up again because we're having a hard time getting him scheduled for the second dose. So, you know, so he's highly anxious. And I would imagine that, when I was in the fire service, one of the things that I saw, because I was interested in psychology, because, you know, I just have that weird brain. I find psychology really fascinating, and I did even when I was a firefighter. And I was more drawn to it when going on a variety of calls, and you know how they say that 85% of the calls are EMS calls. I just had this like gut feeling, not like I kept track, or I probably could like do some sort of research on it and actually figure out some number, but I had a sense that about 85% of those were what we call mental emotional calls. And so, you know, so even in times of not COVID, you probably see a lot of people that it's more about emotion, you know, more anxiety, loneliness. I don't know how many of you, I'm guessing pretty much everybody at one time in their career has gone to at least one call, probably several, where they saw an elderly person in the middle of the night, and there was really nothing wrong with them except that they were just lonely. And I remember seeing a lot of those calls too, and it's not something I ever imagined to see in my own family. And that's something I'm seeing with my dad. You know, we're close and we do everything together. Well, not everything, but I mean, you know, we get together often, you know, fishing, holidays were really a big deal, but this year, not so much. It was a lot smaller. But we, I guess for all intents and purposes, we're a close-knit family. And not being able to get together like that has really taken a toll on everybody. And so he's lonely. And he's like saying stuff like he's getting old and he's going to die alone. And he's lonely and he's useless. And, you know, things that I never in a million years thought I would hear from my dad. But I'm also hearing that from my clients too. And some of them aren't as old as my dad. I have a few retired firefighters, and I hear stuff like that from them. You know, it's like, this is the time where being in the fire service, being a first responder, the risk of contracting COVID-19, it's part of the risk that you sign up for when you become a firefighter. And now that my clients are not in the fire service, they're feeling, you know, they were trying to adjust to that loss of belonging, and what they viewed as their purpose. And so some of them were at retirement age and they kind of got nudged out because of PTSD. Some of them were not even thinking about retirement, but ended up leaving because of their PTSD. And so, you know, it doesn't really seem to matter which way you leave. That loss of purpose and identity was huge. And it was huge when they left. But now in this pandemic, it has made them feel even worse. And then not being able to connect. And one of the coping strategies that I always recommend is to be around people. So having a strong support network is extremely important for a person's mental health. That social aspect is important. And in the fire service, that's like one of the most important resilience factors, if you will. And so now we have people that are isolated. And then, you know, if they're not working anymore, then they're really feeling that loss of identity. And so they're really struggling as well. So this is a collective trauma in every way imaginable, and it has changed everybody's worldview. And I know many people will admit that they don't look at the world the same way and they don't feel as safe in the world. So that's why this feels so bad. And getting information that doesn't really answer your questions and it leaves a lot unknown. I mean, people can do a lot of things. And they can experience a lot of stress when they know there's an end. And we don't know when that end is. And so it's unknown. And we don't know what life is going to be like after when we're on the other side of this. You know, so we can't look at it as when things get back to normal, because normal is going to be different. And so that's one way that people can look at it that can be helpful to them, and that is looking forward to the new normal. And really, it's like every day is kind of like reshaping your normal. I found that, you know, every time, like when things get, so I'm in Washington State, so, you know, when we got lockdown like many other states did, and I say lockdown because I don't know, like quarantine, I mean, we weren't quarantining in place, but we had a stay-at-home order, I think is the proper term. And I remember that, and I know like all the introverts out there rejoiced like, oh, I don't have to go anywhere anymore. But for most people, it was really a hardship for a lot of different reasons. And so we did it, and the expectation was that this was going to be, you know, relatively short term. And then the state started to open back up, and we could go into restaurants, and, you know, people could go back to the office. with precautions in place. And then I found myself feeling like, oh, things are starting to normalize. And I felt like I could breathe again, and I could look forward to, you know, like life starting. And then everything got locked down again. And that really threw me off balance. And that's the same thing that I saw in my practice and in talking with other mental health professionals. So keeping an open mind and reminding yourself that it's going to take time and that you have to create a new normal. And then the disconnection from people. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that have said that they just miss hugging another human being, having that experience of touch. And touch is hugely important. If you've done a lot of reading around, the stress reaction, that fight flight response, the sympathetic nervous system, you know, basically that gets you ready to do something, to fight something, to flee something. I mean, it's like an innate mechanism, but it activates far too often now because, you know, the things that trigger our brain into that life-threatening mode are really not life-threatening. And so we're constantly getting triggered into that. But one of the things that happens is that there's 31 neurohormones that cascade through our system, which helps prepare our body to do whatever it needs to do. And of course, everybody knows adrenaline. We talk about that, you know, what adrenaline does, how it gets us ready. I mean, people, you know, are able to do superhuman things. And then one of the other ones is I can't remember the exact name, but it's like the body's natural, like morphine. So we don't feel pain the same way when we're in fight flight mode. But one of them that doesn't get much attention is oxytocin. And oxytocin is known as the cuddle hormone. And so that one, it draws people together. And that's one of the reasons why when people have a shared traumatic experience, they can build a really strong bond. And part of that is from that oxytocin. And so oxytocin is stimulated in our system also by touch. And it makes us feel good. I mean, and it has that has an impact on us. So oxytocin impacts other things within our body and our system that we need to feel good, to feel relaxed, to feel at peace. And people aren't getting that. They're not being stimulated in that way. So I'm a hugger, and I am so incredibly thankful that I have my husband, and then I have my daughters and my grandchildren, and we have our own pod, and so we come together, and I know where they go. I know, you know, like what contacts they might have, or you know, and the precautions that they take, and so forth. So I've got people that I can hug and touch and feel connected to. And not everybody has that. And that's one of the things that I know, like my dad is missing out on. And a lot of elderly people are missing on it, but a lot of younger people too. And so their life has slowed down and it's become more constricted and they've become more and more stressed and less happy. Now we know, we kind of know the state of everything, and it sounds pretty dire. I do believe that we're coming out of things. I think things are there. It is turning around. We do know some things. We don't know everything, but we do know some things. And so that's one of the things that you have to do. If you're experiencing COVID fatigue or COVID syndrome, then then focus on what you do know. And what we do know is, you know, the wearing a mask, keeping distance, washing hands. So, and what was it? It was like, wash your hands, wear a mask, don't touch your face. That was, I think that was like the first information we got, and it's the piece of information that has been consistent. And it's caring about other people. So if you don't want to wear a mask for you, then wear a mask for everybody else that you care for. Wear a mask out of respect for other people. That's okay. If you think that all this is like some made up thing or exaggerated thing, that's fine. And I know a lot of people who do, because they haven't experienced it directly, and they haven't had a loved one in the hospital that they couldn't visit, and they haven't lost anybody to it. And so it's really hard to believe that this is all so serious, but it is. And if you don't believe it, that's okay. But out of respect for your fellow human beings, wear your mask, wash your hands, stay 6 feet apart. That's the focus on what you know. The other thing is, remind yourself that you have control over what your normal is. Normal doesn't just happen to you. You create it. And most people don't think about it that way. Like, you know, life just gets shaped. I think that one of the things that this is really showing us is that people have to live more mindfully, presently, intentionally, and purposefully. So you can't just, you know, take off and show up at somebody's house. You know, you have to plan it. You have to make meaning out of where you're at. And that means being intentional in that. So you have the power to create your normal. You forget everything I've said. Remember that. You have the power to create your normal. We're not at the point where we have a normal that's going to stay for months, years. They're still changing. So that doesn't mean you can't create small points, small pockets, or small time frames. Find the normal that allows you flexibility, that gives you some comfort. And so that may be in some routine that is not dependent on anything that is impacted by COVID-19. But you have to be intentional, and you have to create it. And then the other thing is, be mindful. So kind of goes with the first one. And when you're mindful, you're being present. We're so used to doing things automatically. I mean, in the fire service, that's one of the things that really can save lives. You know, the saying, fight like you train, train like you fight. You do that so that when you're in an environment that would panic anybody, you don't panic. However, you still have a stress reaction in that moment, because that's innate in us as humans. When we are faced with danger, something that could be life-threatening, our brain says, danger, danger. And it causes the fight flight response. It causes the sympathetic nervous system to activate. So that train like you fight and fight like you're trained, that allows you to do things automatically. when your brain might be shutting down a little bit, because when we are fighting for our life or running for our life, our brain's not really thinking a whole lot. We're not making a lot of higher order thinking decisions. We're doing whatever we need to survive. So being mindful allows us to be present and in the moment and to be more deliberate and to think more about what we're doing. And that is going to help us remain calm, make better decisions, be able to learn. And then when we're learning, we can adapt better. So that's something that is really important. And mindfulness can be accomplished in so many different ways. I mean, most people think about like mindful meditation. And even that, when you talk about meditation, people often think about, well, I got to clear my mind. I got to be blank. And it's like, that is one way you could do it, but no, that's not what it is. There are so many different ways to be mindful and to practice a mindful meditation. It really just comes down to being very present, like experiencing your environment, experiencing what you're engaged in. And so when I talk to people about it, I usually tell them to explore the internet or try out a few apps so that they can find what works for them. And that what it comes down to simply is about experiencing with all your senses or all the senses that you can. So, and experience with all those senses yourself within whatever that space is. I like vacuuming. I like everything about vacuuming. So it's usually the thing that I do last. So if I'm getting ready for, which hasn't happened in a while, but if I were getting ready for a party, I'd be cleaning like a crazy person. And then the last thing I do is vacuum. And vacuuming just calms me down. And there are a lot of, and so vacuuming is kind of like one of my mindful meditation practices. And so it's, it's the feel of the vacuum in my hand and the movement, the rocking back and forth, the walking forward, hearing the vacuum, which is a great white noise. And then seeing the lines. I can't tell you how many people have told me, yeah, I love the seeing the lines in the carpet. The smell, sometimes when it starts out, things smell dusty, but kind of towards the end, then things start to smell a little bit fresher, and I really like that. If it's really dusty, it might taste dust in my mouth, but that's not usually something that I experience. So I have sight, I have sound, I have touch, and touch is, there are so many different ways that it's experienced. Because it can be what I feel on my skin. It could be, holding the vacuum, feeling a vibration, and that sort of thing. Hearing, smell. Oh, smell, yes. And then tasting, not always something that I experience when I'm vacuuming. And then touch. So, your five senses, and then it's like a kinesthetic aspect as well. Feeling my feet, feeling my body rocking back and forth. So it becomes very meditative and very present. So I'm not thinking about the party when people are coming over. I'm not worried about the next day. I am like right there, then and now, in the moment. And it's very calming. And so that is something that is so important. And then the other thing is relaxing, learning to relax, giving yourself some quiet, some peace. And so breathing is another important thing to do. So mindful meditation and relaxation breathing. And the relaxation breathing can be meditative as well. And this is one that I tell people, find an app that you like. Read a tutorial. I'm always amazed at how many people forget how to breathe. And I have learned not to assume that just because you're a paramedic and you come see me and you understand the body system and all this stuff, that you actually know how to breathe. I have been surprised many times. And that's not unusual. As adults, we do tend to breathe in the upper part of our chest. We don't belly breathe anymore. If you have children or grandchildren, nieces, nephews, young cousins, whatever, if you look at how babies breathe, and toddlers even, I mean, they breathe with their belly. When you're learning to deal with respiratory issues with children, they don't tell you to look for chest rise. They tell you to look for the belly to rise. So it's like they're belly breathing. That's what we're supposed to be doing. And that expands all our lung space. And so that is breathing fully. And that, when we do that, our parasympathetic nervous system, which I call the antidote to the sympathetic nervous system, it's the antidote to the stress response, which I know is pretty simplistic, but it kind of works when I explain it to most people. So, and one of the ways to activate it is by taking a deep breath and exhaling. So we want to exhale longer than we inhale, or we want to at least have a pause in the middle. And so there are many different ways of breathing. So, one is like breathe in for 4, hold it for 6, and blow it out for 7. And that's a count of, so you're counting. Police officers learn a breathing technique when they shoot. So they're on the range. It's a 4-4-4. So that's another way. Even though the inhalation is equal to the exhalation, you have a period where you hold your breath and then you blow it out. And then you're blowing it out with some force. Those are just some examples. So managing stress is important. And you may find that what you used to do doesn't work for you, or you don't have access to it. With that said, what I will recommend to people, so I'm going to recommend a few things, and I don't get paid for any of this. These are things that like I've tried out or my clients have tried out. And I am going to recommend to you that if you want to look up more resources, and this is where I often get resources, APA.org. So that's the American Psychological Association page, so APA.org. And if you go to that site, at the top, it has in like yellow, which most websites seem to have now, COVID-19 resources. And so I'm looking at the page right now. And so one of the first things that pops up is COVID-19 stress management tools. And obviously there are things here that are geared towards mental health providers, but there are things here that is good for anybody. And so there are stress management tools. And you can access this. This is not in the member site, so anybody can access this. So when I click on the COVID-19 stress management tools, what I liked is that it gave you immediately, there's 5 I don't know what to call them. I think they're YouTube videos is what they are. Yes, they are YouTube videos. And so you can click on it and it will walk you through whatever the exercise is. So the first one is calm yourself. And so this one is slowly breathe in for four, hold it for four, and then breathe out for six, and then repeat it 10 times. And this is the beautiful thing is that any of these, the mindful meditation, the relaxation breathing, you don't have to spend a lot of time on it. You can do it for 3 minutes. You can do relaxation breathing when you're stopped at a stoplight. Just do it every day or strive to do it every day. Even if you only do it once for 3 minutes, if you're doing it every day, you're going to get the benefit. And you're basically, not only are you relaxing, but you're teaching yourself how to relax. You are reminding yourself what it feels like to relax, and you're pairing the relaxed state with your breath. And so in the moment when you are stressed out and you really need to relax, if you've been practicing relaxation breathing, you'll be able to take one or two breaths and feel yourself relax, and you won't have to do anything more than that. So it's like firefighting, you know, train like you fight like you. How good would you be at fighting a fire if you never trained? And so you can do this parallel consideration, and that is you're fighting the fire of stress. It's a stress fire. So if you don't practice your techniques and tools to put out that stress fire, then you're not going to be very good at it. And then you'll eventually burn the house down to the foundation. So you have the mentality already in place to do this stuff. And it doesn't take long. The next one is focus yourself. So if you have racing thoughts, counting backwards by three in your mind is helpful. So pretty much anything that engages your brain in a little mental manipulation helps to slow racing thoughts. So this is a good time for distraction too. So if you want to go on YouTube and look at like funny animal videos, you could do that too. I mean, so it's, it's hard to have racing thoughts if you're actually mentally manipulating something in your brain. Relaxing yourself. There's one here that's about tense. It's tense and release or progressive muscle relaxation. So you tense each muscle group in your body for 10 seconds and then release it and then notice how it feels. Everything that you do, you're always going to notice how it feels. Grounding yourself. When you go from thing to thing to thing and you're focused in what you've got to do next, it's easy to not feel grounded or balanced. And so grounding yourself is a way to bring yourself to the present moment and to find balance again. So for that one, you're going to do a quick scan of your body and notice your body in space, in your environment. So this is one where you're experiencing as much as you can with all your senses in that moment, in the environment that you're in. And a lot of times it's helpful to literally feel your feet on the ground where you are, or feel your bottom in the chair and your feet on the ground. So, but it's noticing yourself within your space and then celebrating yourself. When we get stressed out, we have a tendency to focus on the negative. In fact, that's another innate mechanism for our survival, is to make negative appraisals. And that comes from when we were hunter-gatherers, and our biggest threat was maybe that lion or that tiger or that bear. But, you know, it's like being the prey animal to a predator. So ensured our survival if we saw off in the distance a beige mound next to a tree. If we thought, oh, that's a lion, and we steered clear of it, that would ensure our survival, even if that brown mound in the distance was just a rock. Because the one time we appraised it as, oh, that's a rock, and it wasn't, we'd be killed. And survival ended. So we have that tendency to make negative appraisals. And so that means, you know, that translates into a much wider sense where we look at our environment more negatively. So it's like if you are fearful of COVID-19, getting sick, giving it to somebody, and you're feeling fearful, then you may be looking at the world as an unsafe place, and that's where a lot of people are now. And so even if you're not admitting to yourself your own fear, I guarantee that it's there at some level. And maybe you're good at suppressing it, but it does come out, and it might come out in ways that you don't want it to come out, like being irritable, short-tempered with people around you that you love and care about. So negative appraisals, having negative thoughts about ourselves even, that is part of our survival mechanism. It's not the best one at times, but it's still there. So you have to be purposeful in countering that. And so the exercise they have here in celebrating yourself is one way to deal with that. And that is to think about three things that went well. Think about three things that you're grateful for. So some of you may have heard of gratitude journaling. There's a reason why that's so powerful, because it forces us to focus on the positive things, the good things in our life. And when you're actually thinking about those things, you're not thinking about the bad things, the things that don't work out, the things that you're fearful of. And it can help balance things out. Also on this page is tips to manage stress. And so it actually lists off five science-based tips to manage your stress. So calm yourself. If you're calm, you're making better decisions. And you're allowing yourself to learn from whatever it is that you're facing. And when you're facing dangerous situations or novel situations, you want to be able to learn. The other is focus yourself. So I know a lot of people that are struggling with racing thoughts or ruminations, and it could be like they could be focused and on, you know, one specific thing that they just keep like reliving in their brain, or it can be really scattered, like a tornado swirling around in their head. And so this one, super simple, counting backwards by threes in your mind. Relax yourself. So that progressive muscle relaxation or tension release, this is a great one to do at night when you're trying to settle down to go to sleep, because I know a lot of people are struggling with sleep. Grounding yourself. I think that this is a good one because it just brings you back to the present moment. It takes you away from the worry of like what's going to happen next, what's tomorrow, what's next week, what's going to happen with COVID, when are we going to go back to normal? It just brings you to the present moment, and it reminds you where you are, and that is the most powerful place for you to operate from. And then celebrate yourself, or identify what you're grateful for. So there's a lot of bad, and I use air quotes again. There's a lot of bad in the world. COVID-19 is the worst, one of them. Maybe not the worst, but it's definitely up there. So the news is going to be right there to tell you all about the bad in the world and to remind you about COVID-19 and to build your hopes up with information only to shatter your hopes and what you thought you knew by basically telling you a bunch of other stuff that you're like, I don't understand this. What is going on? What do we know? But you know, celebrating yourself, being grateful for things, that's going to help immensely, because it's going to take up space and not allow all this bad stuff to take up resonance in your brain, if you will. And I will say, and it's not on here, and I think that this is like one of the most challenging things, but try to find ways to be present with other people. So if you have a loved one who is isolated and alone, then find a way, see them, you know, visit them where you're outside and socially distant. Do virtual happy hours, or coffee dates or something. So get together virtually, get together outside and walk, maintaining, wearing your mask and maintaining your distance. Getting out into nature is another really great thing to do. And you're more likely to be able to create distance there. We live next to a really popular hiking trail. It's actually pretty hard to maintain distance on that trail. So I don't hike that trail right now. I actually feel much better just walking out on the street. So there are a lot of places that you can look for resources. So APA.org is a great place. And then I want to leave you with some app suggestions. There are several, and some of them I've tried, and some of them, or a couple of them, my clients have used and recommended. But there is, I have to look so I can see all these. 10% Happier. I have a client that's using that one, and I just downloaded it. It's got like a 2-week free trial, and I wanted to see how it compared to the other ones. I have not used it, but I will play around with it a little bit, but my client really likes it. And it has a beginner program to meditation, and the meditations are short, and they involve, you know, that focusing on something or the breath or both. Calm is another one. And that one, I have tried that one a couple times, and that also is one that was recommended by a client. And then Headspace is one that I've tried, and I like Headspace, and I think that it is one of the more expensive ones if you're paying for access to it for long term. The last one that's like a all-encompassing kind of app is called Breathe, and that's BREETHE. And that one is the one that I've started using, and I really like that one. I was able to get it. I actually was able to get it for free because of being a psychologist. And so that's one of the things, is that all of these have a membership, required to access everything in it. They all have free trials or they have free tools that you can use. Headspace is one that was offering last year anyway. They were offering, I believe, a free membership to healthcare providers and I believe to first responders as well. I don't know if they're still doing that, but if you check these apps out, it would be worth emailing them and saying, do you offer a discount for a first responder? Because I know that there are, I remember reading that there are a lot of apps like this that are subscription-based that have waived the subscription fee for a period of time or for life. So it's worth asking. So those are the apps that I would recommend, and they have breathing exercises, yoga, relaxation, meditation, so that progressive muscle relaxation, help for sleep. Breathe has it has sleep stories. It's got white noise. I mean, so anything that you need to do that's going to help you sleep. But what everybody has found and what I've heard and what I've experienced myself is what used to work for us to manage our stress doesn't work now, or it doesn't work well enough. And so we need to incorporate new things and find new ways of interacting and connecting in new ways of being, essentially. So explore the apps. There also is one, it's a breathing app for relaxation breathing that has a meditative quality, and it's one that I recommend as well. And that one is called Breathe 2, number 2, Relax. So Breathe 2, Relax. So check out the apps. Go online and check out the resources. I wish I had all my resources nice, neat, organized so I could find it, because I have come across some really great resources for helping with relaxation and managing stress and dealing with the uncertainty that comes with COVID. So we will get through this. It will get better. I think it is getting better now. I'm not quite sure when we're going to be at a point where we can say, things are normal. Try and keep an open mind, be flexible, take care of yourself, ask for help if you need it, and find ways that you can manage your stress. It doesn't take a lot of time, and focus on the good things. And I think that's it. So you're in the same boat. It's the COVID syndrome, and you're in the humanity boat with the rest of us. So we're all going to get through this, and you're going to be okay. So that seems like a great place to end. So I hope that you enjoy this episode. I hope you get something out of it. If you want to contact me, if you have questions, if you have something to add, want to share something, or you want me to talk about something, or you just want to talk, you can email me at, Beth, so my first name, B-E-T-H, at integrativemhw, and it's integrative with MHW, which stands for mental health and wellness, so integrativemhw.com. Beth at integrativemhw.com. And that's it for me. So go out there and relax.
Well, thank you, Dr. Murphy. Very interesting. Even though I live with you, I always hear things that I've never heard before. So thank you for sharing with me and your audience. And I, for one, appreciate your deep carpet cleaning, because I know I have a cleaner house when you're done. So, and with that, we'll close the show. Thank you, Fire Engineering, and all of its sponsors. FDIC is moving to August, anticipating that the our limitations on our crowds are going to be somewhat limited through the springtime. So the new dates are going to be in August. So hopefully we get to see the 35,000 people there, and all the lawyers and the psychologists, and Dr. Beth Murphy will be there as well. So have a good night. Take care of yourself, and God bless.
Good night.